Hello, 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 and welcome to another edition of Upon Further Review with the Podcast Profs. Although we are once again down a prof, although it's a different prof and for a different reason. My name is Dr. Soren Fanning. I am an associate professor of history here at Robert Morris University. My normal partner, Dr. Anthony Moretti, is sadly unavailable. Either that or his bracket got busted, one of the two. So,
because he's not here, I'm going to say this for you. You didn't say friendly neighborhood.
No, I didn't. But in part, I want to keep him guessing.
He doesn't need to guess. He knows you're going to say it every week without fail.
That's true. And I freely admit, and again, I love Anthony as the day is long, but I do love how steamed he gets when I say it. And I don't know why, but it's just fun to watch the look on his face.
Because he's a journalist. He can't be friendly according to everybody.
That's true. Thankfully, as a historian, I either am not bound by that or I frankly don't care.
Or you don't exist. It really depends.
Ooh, an existential crisis. If there's no historian in the room, did the event happen?
No.
No, okay. All right, well, we solved that. And for those of you listening, that voice is our producer extraordinaire, our voice of reason, Mr. John Rowland.
And the voice that mostly only fills in.
Well, you do so admirably. By the way, did you have a good weekend?
I did. I watched Jesus Christ Superstar with my family. I'm not that big into religion.
Okay.
But it's a fantastic show, and they did great justice to it on Sunday. It honestly,
really?
I probably liked it more than the original recording.
Whoa.
And I don't like any of the other recordings at all.
Nicely. Well, I mean, they did get some good voice talent. I'll give them that. They did.
Everyone did better than I expected.
That's always pleasant.
Except Cooper.
Oh.
But I didn't expect worse from him either. He just did what I expected.
Okay.
He fit the role perfectly. But
fair.
I knew what to expect from him. It was exactly what I expected.
Well, that's good. And that's always fun. Easter's a weird holiday. I mean, I think in the sense that, and I'm not trying to offend anyone, but every little kid goes through this brief period where they think Easter is the holiday in which Jesus rose from the dead in the form of a bunny with chocolate. But eventually, they all sort it out. So, and to those of you who are still dealing with the insulin hangover of that, welcome back.
Speaking of Easter,
yeah,
and chocolate, though, my mom hides a basket for me every year still just because, I don't know, she likes to. I'm an only child.
Well, so parents like that.
Exactly. And since I'm an only child, she hasn't had any extra time to do it, so she's doing it while I still live at home. And this year, her idea of hiding the basket was giving up and just setting it on the dining room
nice.
Table. And I still didn't see it when I first walked
and
down
yet it
to
worked.
Let the dog out.
The assumption, of course, being, hey, I bet he's so sleep-deprived, he'll walk right by it.
She nailed it. I didn't go to bed till like, I think, 5 that night, woke up at 10:30.
Wow, nice.
Yeah, friends unexpectedly wanted to hang out. I'm like, I guess I'm up. Didn't expect to be up till 5. But
at the risk of sounding like that old broken down man, I remember the days where I used to be able to do that. In fact, I can remember the one moment I realized I can no longer stay up that late.
Oh, I struggle now. If you asked me a year ago,
mm-hmm.
not a problem. Every single night, didn't matter when I had to wake up. Now, I'm a grumpy old man.
Welcome to the club.
And the worst part is, I'm still at the stage where I want to go to bed late at night because I'm still used to having a late start.
Right.
So I go to bed at like 4:30 in the week now, and I wake up at like 10:30, and I know I should be going to bed at like 2 to wake up at 10. And when 2 o'clock
meanwhile,
strikes,
once it hits 11 o'clock for me, I'm out. That's it. I can't go anymore.
Yeah. When 2 o'clock strikes, though, I look at it, I'm like, I should wrap this up soon. And then I don't wrap it up for another hour. And then I still take an hour to get ready for bed because I'm in no rush. It's awful.
Yeah. I remember the old game Civilization for the PC, which was, I don't know if you ever played that.
I did. It is hard.
Well, no, it's that one more turn issue.
Oh, yeah, and then one turn takes 20 minutes, so you're like, nothing happened this turn. I can't end here.
Exactly. You know, it's almost the Netflix effect, you know, where you finish one, I'm going to go to bed, next one starts in 5, or, well, it'd be rude to go to bed now. No, I completely understand, so. Well, welcome to the ranks of grumpy old men, at least of people who require some kind of sleep. One of the things that there's a new book out that I've been sort of poking around that's actually kind of interesting. And I'm going to completely mangle this title. I don't know if you've heard about it. I think it's called Brotopia.
That's it.
Yeah. And that's the one that's supposed to, you know, be looking inside the culture at Silicon Valley. Now, I don't know what kind of an experience you had in high school. I, of course, was born in 1973, so I went to high school in the bad old days of the 1980s, back when, you know, there was no such thing as anti-bullying. That was called just, you know, boys being boys. And I think the principal who came up with that is probably an advisor to the current president, given his behavior. But it was a different time. But I distinctly remember being short, scrawny, glass. I mean, at least I'm not scrawny anymore. I went the other way. But with glasses, kind of nerdy. Yeah, I got picked on a lot. And I definitely remember a loathing of, I guess, what you would now call bro culture.
Yeah.
Yeah. And did you have the same experience in your high school?
People entirely left me alone because...
Did you have a cloaking device or something?
No, my stoic bluntness now was 10 times worse in high school because I didn't like any of them at all. I liked my best friend and his friends, but because we all grew up in elementary school together. Everyone else, if they just coincidentally walked out of school and left me alone, I wouldn't have known any different other than I didn't have to hear them yelling.
Wow. So you could count the total number of syllables you exchanged over a 4-year period?
No, but per day I could.
Okay, well, there you go.
I probably put it about like maybe 200.
That works. Okay, so you had sort of the natural, I don't know what you call that, the pufferfish.
Yeah. Also, when you blast not pop music out of your earbuds, people don't like you as much. That was part of it.
So was that deliberate?
No.
Oh, okay. It just worked out well.
Yes.
Oh, well, that's good. But yeah, I mean, and, you know, I don't know what the emphasis was, but, you know, especially if you weren't athletic, you were way down on the totem pole. By the way, speaking of athletics, and I'm going to completely digress here, you know Professor Thompson, Chester Thompson?
Kind of, I think.
Yeah, great guy, great professor who works here at RMU, former Army veteran. He's doing this challenge to bring awareness to the fact of veteran suicides, that every day 22 veterans, on average, commit suicide. And he had tagged me, you know, want to help me out. And I said, sure. And I probably should have asked, what are we doing? Because what he does...
I have fallen for that trap too many times.
And I am not. So we go out to the gazebo out here, and it's to do 22 push-ups. And I looked at him and I went, Chet, have you met me? I realize it's a radio show. You can't see, but I mean, anyone who can, you know, anyone who knows me knows that I am a 4-year runner-up for least athletic person on campus. I'm in horrible shape. And so I presume I was only brought aboard for comic relief value. I did do it though.
Good job.
Although I did warn Chet that he's going to have to bring the stretcher because I wasn't altogether sure I was going to be able to get up again. But my athletic prowess has not improved since high school. So I guess getting back to the book, I guess my question is, what do you think actually accounts for this sort of uber masculine bro culture that tends to permeate? And I don't know if you get the same impression that I do. It seems to be dominant in athletics and business.
I would take a stab at it and say it's tradition from when
almost certainly
only men did do it.
True.
So there was, your goal wasn't to one-up somebody by being nicer. It was to assert your dominance. And it happens to be that dominant traits are considered masculine traits, such as the weird grunting sounds in sports.
Right. Well, there you go. And, you know, you have to assert your dominance somehow, and most corporate cultures tend to frown on peeing on the furniture to mark your territory.
And if they don't, you don't want to work there.
Yeah, and you really don't want to work there. I guess what gets to my question is, you know, business, I get it. It's, I don't like it, but It's very competitive, and there's a lot of analogies with athletics. This is what I didn't understand. Why is it so dominant in the tech fields? I mean, I remember, and I'm going to bring up something. I'm not sure you're familiar with Gamergate.
I've heard of it, but you're going to have to remind me what exactly it is.
What had happened was a journalist, a woman who was a programmer. She created a number of games. She wrote this article pretty much taking down this, delineating out the misogynistic culture of video games.
The second you said something about that woman, I knew exactly who you were talking about. This happened like, what, 4 years ago?
Something like that, four or five years ago.
Yeah, that, this story is really stupid.
Well, we can't not talk about stupid things because
yeah, but then again, the evening stupid, news. Stupid makes news.
Well, stupid is news. I mean, we have the President of the United States attacking Amazon because he doesn't like the person who owns it.
That's great.
You know, and this coming from a party that historically had been free trade and keep the government out of business and now is embracing tariffs and all these.
Also, Jeff Bezos, I believe, owns Washington Post, which is a conservative paper.
Well, right, even though
so Trump,
if you listen
Trump's,
to... If
Trump's you, even going off the boat and attacking what should be his allies.
Well, here's the weird thing, and I know we're getting way off course, but it's a course worth taking. Not only is he attacking Jeff Bezos and Amazon, which he founded, but please note, Amazon does not own the Washington Post. Jeff Bezos owns, and it, by the way, if... I don't know if I'm mispronouncing that.
I think it's Bezos, but
Bezos?
I don't think
okay.
I think what you're saying would be right culturally, but because
he's
Bezos, American,
then.
It just gets butchered, and then that's just what it is now. Right.
Well, Jeff, if you're listening, I apologize. My first name is Soren, so I'm used to mispronunciations. But he owns both companies, but neither company has really any input on each other. But this recent attack... arguing that he's putting the Postal Service out of business. I don't know. Did you see that?
I did not see exactly that. I read that he was making verbal attacks against Bezos, but I didn't read into it anymore yet.
Well, the president, in an astonishing case of brain-to-mouth diarrhea, just had a Twitter eruption in which he was arguing that Amazon is taking advantage of the postal system.
But Amazon's with UPS. FedEx? No, UPS? One of the two. I think.
That's one problem. If you order something on Amazon, you get to pick the delivery system.
Sometimes. Depends.
Yeah, usually, though. You can select if it's going to be like UPS Express, regular UPS, U.S. Postal Service, whatever it is. But the other thing is...
something where you live. I don't have that option.
Okay, maybe so. But the other side of that is... isn't by using the Postal Service, Amazon giving the Postal Service more use?
Clearly not.
I just, what passes for logic just simply escapes me. But suffice to say, between, in that little Twitter fight, there's a lot of very bro culture chest thumping going on. And I guess one of the things that perpetually astounds me is... the insecurity a lot of these people at least demonstrate, even though they may verbally not say so. Why are people afraid of women in positions of authority? I don't get that. I honestly don't. I'm not saying you do, but I'm just venting at this point. But it's people who should know better.
The only semi-rational, I won't even call it rational.
Right. Well, we agree it's irrational.
Is that it reminds people of... the mother, because the mother's the one who's typically around more because, again, traditionally the father's been the one who's worked more.
Right.
And he's the one who's not home all day when the kids are, so blah, blah, blah. And the mother's the one who does most of the discipline in turn. And that's a stretch and probably also horribly stupid.
Well,
so I'm sure that that's not even it.
Well, as the lawyer said, I think we'll stipulate to the stupidity of this entire system. from the word go. But I think there's something to that. This is what I find fascinating. When you talk to these people who, whether we're talking simple what one of my instructors used to simply refer to collectively as chuckleheads. You know, in other words, not actively hostile, just not terribly thoughtful about the situation. You know, that's on one end of the spectrum. That's annoying enough to deal with. But when you go into this sort of virulent attacks on women for reasons I cannot fathom, I mean, to the point of making rape threats and just, I mean, some seriously nasty stuff. The only thing this is what I'm struck by. It seems to me these people are incapable of imagining a world of simple equality. Like, the assumption is either men will be dominant over women, or, and this appears to be the fever dream or fever nightmare reaction they're going to, that women will treat men the way men have treated women, and dear God, we can't let that happen.
So you said something that sparked a thought for me, and that's, I think part of it might also be that people still feel threatened that there's not enough jobs, which is kind of true.
Right.
And it's going to be especially true as automation comes in. So if you're effectively doubling the workforce without doubling how many jobs there are, why not do your best to get rid of half the potential employees?
You know, it's interesting you bring that up, because I actually, about a month ago, did a whole roundtable on this. And I don't think a lot of people really understand how... All right, let me back up. I have a theory in that capitalism is not going to be overthrown, but it is going to die of old age. And I truly believe right now it's kind of on life support. My example is this. You, in theory, under capitalism, you should be adopting the most efficient system, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So in theory, you should automate everything that can be automated, correct?
But if you do that, you have no workers to gain... to make money, to fund back into the system.
But in theory, that's going to save the company money because they don't have to pay wages. However, we routinely employ people for things that people shouldn't have to do. Case in point, the Walmart greeter.
That dishwashers for the most part?
I mean, not only is the Walmart greeter or a dishwasher, that job could be done just as well with a machine. In the case of the Walmart greeter, that job could be done just as well with a sign.
Not even a sign. It could be done just as well with nothing.
Right. So the
unless they're giving out stickers. If they're giving out stickers.
A little sticker dispenser sort of thingy.
But otherwise, they serve no purpose other than to promote goodwill, which costs the company next to nothing, especially since people, if a Walmart still has a greeter, people will go because they feel like it's just, employing more people is better for the community.
I think at this point, Walmart isn't terribly concerned with its national reputation.
No, I'm not sure if they have one anymore.
I mean, they don't strike me. Well, they are, but I mean, clearly the criticisms of their labor practices have not been a turnoff. So my argument is that these people are being employed because if we truly automated every job that could be automated, we'd have an unemployment rate of around 40-ish%. And that's catastrophic. But it raises an interesting thought experiment. Why do people need to have jobs? Because this idea of working 9 to 5 in order to get by is actually pretty recent if you look over the 6,000-year sweep of human history. So why do people need to earn money? Because they need to afford the basic necessities of life. But this is new, relatively speaking. Yep. Like about 150 years old. But up until then, most people, although poor, were fairly self-sufficient. But now, because we're essentially selling our labor for a wage, things like food, shelter, heat in the winter, cooling in the summer, clean water, clothing, all of those are available only on an ability to pay basis, much like in the U.S. healthcare. If you have a bunch of unemployed people, they're not going to be able to afford it. I would make this argument. We are reaching a point in human history where I truly think that we're looking at the end, sort of the final century or so of money itself. Just because technologically, I think we're going to be able to manufacture and make pretty much anything we need at close to zero cost. So, I mean, that's my personal theory, but you know, you're right. Maybe the competition for these jobs, maybe that sparks some of it. The other thing is I think we just have to ask, where the heck does all this misogyny come from?
That I could not answer. Right. I've always struggled to understand why someone being any kind of different matters. And why especially the only differences that are things that have nothing to do with you matter. Like, you don't choose to be Hispanic. You don't choose to be Chinese. It happens. Good for you or bad for you. I don't know. I can't tell you that.
Well, that's interesting because one of the things you just highlighted is a factor most people don't want to think about having a big role in their lives, and that's luck. Let's face it. None of us know in utero not only what we're going to be born as or what even the odds that we're going to be born as. I am perfectly aware that I got lucky only in the sense that I was born in 1973 to be a middle-class white male. And that confers certain privileges, at least in 1973 when I was born. Now, that doesn't mean I don't deserve what I've accomplished, but I do realize that if this were a video game, again, to go back to our gaming analogy, I'd be playing life on the easy setting.
And even if someone exactly like you was born, mm-hmm. and everything happened the same way, there is a chance that something just randomly goes different, and it's not the same. Like, all of the rags-to-riches stories that happen, pretty much,
mm-hmm.
people don't want to admit that it's luck.
Right.
But it is. Like, sure, they're doing what they can to manipulate the odds into their favor. Like, you don't build a successful business by just getting a ton of debt and never making revenue. But whether...
right.
But whether or not your business ever actually takes off, it's more or less down to luck.
Oh, yeah. Well, there's a ton of factors beyond your control. And I think one of the reasons you're seeing a lot of the frustration and angst today, in part that helped elect Donald Trump, is the recognition that so much is outside people's control, but not wanting to admit so much is outside our control. You know, in some ways, we have been trained from a very young age to hate the poor because we see, or at least we've been told, that wealth is a reflection of our value to society. And therefore, if someone is poor, it's because they've done something wrong. Whereas the reality is, and I would have thought the crash of 08 had pointed this out, sometimes it's just bad luck.
Yeah, and then a counterargument to that is, if you're super rich, you can stay super rich by just mindlessly investing in don't touch it. It'll stay there. As long as you don't overspend, you'll stay needlessly rich.
So if there's one key to success, it's be born rich.
Exactly.
Okay. Well, we solved it.
Yeah. Like I forget what I think that it's like if you have like $100 million in a bank account or like a little more or less, mm-hmm. it depends on the interest rate, obviously. You get $1 million in interest per year. As long as you don't overspend that for every $100 million you have in a risk-free investment, you can't
lose
money.
Yeah.
Inflation might get you in, like, I don't know, a couple thousand years at that rate of how much money you have.
You might have to survive on only $500,000 a year.
Yeah. Or there will be a new currency, which will be even stronger.
True. Well, wonderful conversation. We are nearly out of time. Real quick, before we move forward, your career here at Robert Morris is rapidly drawing to a close.
I am in no way ready for it.
Well, I was going to say, what are you most looking forward to post-graduation? I'm trying to go positive here.
I would probably say I just want to start working, not because I necessarily care about the work. If I enjoy what I do, great, but that's not why I want to do it.
Mm-hmm.
I want to work so that I can end up spending the time that's free to myself to do things that I value with myself, like being a better musician, collecting whatever useless amount of CDs that will have no resale value.
But you enjoy them.
Exactly.
Well, and let's face it, enjoying life should not be seen as a vice, so...
Yeah, the work's going to be a necessary thing. I want to enjoy it as much as I can, but what I look most forward to is just the life that has nothing to do with work.
Yeah, the work is merely the means to that end.
Yes.
All right, well, I wish you all the best. We're going to enjoy having you around. At least, are you going to be around in the summer? Or are you heading out after commencement?
I will be headed out like the day after commencement or something, and then I'll be back in the middle of May, and then I don't know.
Well,
it'll be job searching until then.
Well, this podcast owes in many ways its existence to you, and we're going to enjoy having you for a few more weeks. He is John Roland, producer extraordinaire, and the man who is redefining the Zen secret of happiness in life. Anthony Moretti, unfortunately, could not be here. We wish him all the best. I am your friendly neighborhood historian. See what I did there?
Good job.
Dr. Soren Fanning. And we will see you next week on Upon Further Review with the Podcast Profs.